This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet. Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit amfam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Season 3, Episode 7 of The Umbrella Academy, Al Petersen, may be over, but we're just getting started here on post-show recaps. I'm Mary Kwiatkowski, and I am here to reveal a big secret to my co-host, Marissa Garza. Marissa, I'm sorry to tell you. I lied. Stan is not, in fact, our child. I borrowed him from a friend from my punk rock band.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm really sorry to share that with you.
Oh, well, you know, I'm going to just need a minute. Thank you for the minute, but I think we're going to get through it. We still got the pod. We're going to be great. It's going to be fine.
Yeah. Another episode down. We're really starting to get to the home stretch here. I mean, where we left off this episode at the end, world's really, really getting destroyed at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. We had like a brief little pause of like, oh, it's going to be fine. But no, it's not going to be fine.
It's in fact not going to be fine.
Yeah. It's the opposite of fine. Whatever that. Yeah.
The opposite yes. of fine. The episode title, of course, German for goodbye. And we are saying goodbye to just probably millions of people around the world at the end of this episode.
And a few more of our Sparrow friends.
Yeah, we're really reaching to the end of the list when it comes to the Sparrows. You know, we started off real strong with seven of them, and sad to say that by the end of the episode, we're down to two. So let's get into it. Let's talk everything through, break it all down. Of course, thank you, as always, for following us on our feeds, postshowrecaps.com/umbrella-academy-feed or postshowrecaps.com/super, postshowrecaps.com/binge. We're reaching the end of our recap series here, but we will continue through the end of the month and then have our feedback show. So make sure you're starting to think about some of that feedback, questions for the whole series, thoughts, etc. And you can leave those either in the Patreon Discord, patron of Post Show Recaps, or you can send questions and thoughts directly to us on our Twitters or at super@postshowrecaps.com. As always, this episode will be spoiler-filled all the way through the end of the season. So if you have not caught up on the end of season three, make sure to just finish that and then come back here. You've only got a couple more episodes left. Yeah, we'll be here. We'll be here for you when you finish. So let's jump into a couple things. First off, this episode, like many of the others, starts with a little bit of a flashback. It doesn't really tell us exactly how far back we flash because we've got that whole time travel thing to deal with. But presumably this is shortly after the end of season two for Lila, at least. She is in the at the commission in 1953, and she is watching and rewatching the scene where her mom killed her in the barn before Five was able to rewind time, which does bring up an interesting question of the infinite switchboard. I guess it doesn't just show one timeline. It shows all versions of possible things that could have happened. Is that your understanding?
That is my understanding. And it is mainly framed from my watching of Loki, the Disney Plus series that is coming out of season two. Well, they're filming it now. But anyway, they also have this room where they like watch all the timelines and they can like watch the timelines. So similar vibes here. But I thought it was an interesting way for Lila to like process what just happened to her, theoretically, just as in
a really traumatic way like, of processing.
Yeah,
it.
I know. But like sometimes, you know, you go through something and it's like, did I see it? Did I like what happened? And you know, she had the resources to be able to go back and kind of find out what exactly did happen and what happened. And that's something for her to kind of think about, especially, I don't know if she knows if she's pregnant while she's watching this. It probably has to do with some maternal something going on. But I thought it was an interesting place for her to end back up.
Well, especially since she's going to say at the end of the episode that she was drawn back to the infinite switchboard room actually to watch a clip of Diego. So my guess is it probably is after she's realized she's pregnant. Although the timeline on that, a little confusing, but yeah. We don't know. We don't know exactly. Like, for all we know, Lila might have left the group in the barn for some number of days, weeks, or months, and then come back to the commission at a later point. This doesn't necessarily directly after that previously happened.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So then Herb and Dot, who we only get a tiny little bit of in this season, but they show up and tell Lila like, hey, they're very clearly intimidated by her, but they're like, you know, you've been voted out of the commission by everyone else because, you know, of your relation to the handler, so we're gonna have to have you leave. But Lila's clearly left like a trail of destruction of all the commission members that she's murdered, and so she kind of threatens them. They're like, "But we'll drop you off in any time period and location you want." And so that's what takes her to West Berlin in 1989. Now, do you think there is beyond the significance, obviously, of the wall separating East and West Berlin, do you think that there is anything else significant about her going back to 1989? Obviously, lots happening here with, you know, the whole Kugelblitz and everything.
Well, I think, wasn't that they were born in October 1st, 1989?
Yes.
So I think that's an important factor. Historically, 1989 seemed like a good time to join the people, you know, bashing down the wall. But I think it's just like the year of her birth situation.
Oh, that there's also that. There.
So, and just as a side note, if you've also watched Russian Doll Season 2, which, Mary, it's okay that you have it. But for anyone listening out there who has, isn't it interesting also that this time travel show also went to West Berlin? Interesting, interesting. Anyway, continue.
So something that I think is interesting also is that the fall of the Berlin Wall happened in November of 1989. Yeah. So I was trying to think for a second, like whether or not in that timeline, this is so confusing. In this timeline, in 1989, I guess we don't know, is the timeline Lila's in, is that the same as the timeline that Harlan grew up in where he had powers? Or is this a different 1989? Ooh, you know?
Well, that's I'm going to need a whiteboard for. That I don't know.
Yeah, man.
But, like, my thinking was, like, obviously the handler went back to 1989 to put this here after she had... Like Lila, it wasn't a question of whether Lila was born yet or not in this scenario. Because
right. In this scenario, this is post when Lila was born. But I guess baby Lila is probably existing somewhere.
Yeah. Baby Lila's existing, Lila. But not with the handler.
No.
With her family before Five comes and kills them. Yeah.
Because I don't think the handler adopts her until she's like 4 or 5 years old, I think.
So theoretically, if she was in the same place, like, she could have run into herself if she was in the same geographical area. But that did not happen because she was in West Berlin. I think that might be why things are far away from wherever Lila was picked up from.
Yeah, that could make sense.
You know?
So what did you think about the whole band that she joins and all that?
I thought it was very fitting for Lila and also a great place for her to like get rid of some of that rage and energy of, you know, at this point I thought it was just like, oh, my mom killed me and then I was brought back to life and now I don't have a mom. And then also like dealing with losing the Umbrella Academy and everything. I thought it was a very fitting place for her to land.
It is a little frustrating, though, with the note from the handler that's left with the suitcase. So we should mention that, or briefcase. Lila goes to the wall because she somehow figured out or knew that the handler had hidden a briefcase there inside the wall. So she takes it out and has a note from the handler being like, "Ah, my darling daughter, you're so great. Thank you for finding this. If you're being chased by something, keep running. Don't trust anyone except for me. I love you," all that. And I think it's frustrating because that does line up a lot with like the handler that we saw in season two interacting with Lila. But then at the end of season two, it was so, she was just so like, never mind. I'm just going to kill you. Like, you're done with. And I'm like, really?
I think it's also like part of the whole got to keep Lila close to me tactic. Like, I think it was manipulative in a way to say, like, depending on wherever, you know, this Lila knew who the handler was, but if a different Lila had landed there and gotten the, you know,
gotten
the briefcase, it might have been seen a little bit differently.
Yeah. Oh, well. So she joins the band, I'm going to get this so wrong in pronunciation, probably.
Good luck.
Puppin Totem, something like that. I don't know. But the Kill Dolls is the rough translation there. So there you go. And she's drumming. She's kind of hallucinating Diego in the crowd, clearly still has that attachment there. And then this is where we get the scene of her talking to Stan and asking him to come torment a friend in America with her. And he's like, yeah, sure, I guess, whatever.
I mean, can we call this kidnapping? Because he went willingly, but he's also a minor. So I don't know.
I don't think that you could say like, oh, but the minor said they wanted to get into my creepy van with me and then come like my. No, that's not how that works.
No, this is like rewatching it. I was like, oh, Lila, yeah, you did that. That was the thing you did.
Definitely still partially kidnapping, at the very least, partial kidnapping. So, and then that's when we kind of pop back into present day for the rest of the episode. But we'll come back to Lila and Diego at the end. Let's start with probably my favorite plot line of this episode, although there's so many plot holes here and a lot of things that people, especially on Reddit, were like, why is this happening? But I kind of loved it, so we're going to talk about it anyway. Reggie and Klaus having father-son time bonding. And the part that's so great, if you remember from the end of last episode, it ends with Klaus sort of telling all his like fears and desires and hopes to Reggie and being like, I just want a purpose in life, etc. And then Reggie electrocutes him or somehow shocks him to death, I guess. And then they start this episode with Reggie driving along the road singing along to some music. What'd you think of that? I will spoiler and say this is my favorite musical moment. There's several in this episode, but this is my favorite when he's singing Ride With Me. It's so good. Just having Reggie sing that by Nelly. So good. So he's riding along and he starts to hear Klaus in the trunk, who has been dead for 22 minutes and has finally come back to the world.
You know, as fathers and sons bond traditionally, yes? This is like totally
traditional bonding. Yeah. That's how I bond with my father. Yeah, for sure.
That's how that works. I liked this. I mean, obviously, on the rewatch, I definitely see it with more of a, I see what you're doing here, Reggie. But on first watch, I was eating it up. I was like, oh, look at how fun this is. Look at how trusting Klaus is of Reggie. And Reggie can change. It could all happen.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, he can definitely change. And there's definitely no ulterior motive to
No, never. I was like, oh, wow. Maybe he's going to join the Umbrella Academy.
Yeah. So I mean, this is where Klaus starts talking with Reggie, and he's like, you're so mean, you're horrible, you just killed me. And Reggie's like, no, like, let's bond. Like, what did you enjoy doing with me in your time? And he's like, nothing, you're horrible. Like, we didn't have a good relationship. And Reggie's like, what? We didn't go on any family road trips? No. So is that implying that this Reggie did do that kind of thing?
I think so. That's what I took away from it. It's like, what so do you mean? I didn't do these things I did before I got drugged by my kids? Like,
I don't know. But yeah, so that's when Klaus breaks it down. And he's like, yeah, things kind of fell apart with the Umbrella Academy. At first, Five got lost in time. Ben died during the Jennifer incident. Second time we've heard about Jennifer recently. Then you drugged your daughter for years. You turned Luther into a half-monkey moon boy, and then you locked me in a box full of ghosts. And then you killed yourself so that we couldn't get any answers. And noticeably, nothing directly done to Allison there, but
yeah.
Diego. Except just like being mean to Diego. And
yeah.
I don't know.
That's true.
So I like that breakdown of season one, though.
Yeah, it was kind of like Klaus's little podcast. They were in a car. He was just filling them in.
Yeah. So Reggie wants to help Klaus figure out the extent of his powers. And what did you think about the little game that Reggie creates here?
Okay, so here's the thing. I have so many questions. One, how did you know when the cars were going to come down the street? Okay. This is my whole thing. So basically, he's testing Reggie's powers, or like training Reggie by playing catch and then having him like get run over by a car or a bus or something to make him dead again and then like time his thing. I did enjoy the whole notebook tracking of it. I like the stopwatch. I thought that was really fun. But like every time it kept happening, I was like, but how did he know that that car was going to be there at that exact moment in that exact time? Is Reggie just making the cars?
So these are the two biggest things that Reddit has an issue with. Thing number one, why are the cars coming out of nowhere and like Klaus is not noticing them? And number two, why are none of the cars stopping? They're just hitting Klaus and moving.
Yeah. Well, and also like, why is Klaus not moving? Like you can hear a car. Like you can most times. I mean, I spent some time in central Illinois in the middle of a road. You hear when a car is coming. Like.
Also, like, I believe this show takes place in New York and somehow in 22 minutes.
Let's go to Pennsylvania. I'm just going to assume they went back to Pennsylvania.
But it only took 22 minutes for him to drive that far. Like, I don't know.
Or the farmlands of New Jersey.
Why are the farmlands of wherever they are not more destroyed by the Kugel Blitz? Like, the city is, like, on fire.
Also very good questions. Very good questions. Yeah, but at the same time, it was very distracting with how cute it was that they were doing this to Cats in the Cradle.
Yes, I did like that. So another great song moment in the background here was that part. And Klaus is first very upset. There's a lot of gruesome moments of him coming back and then like his bones straightening out.
Yeah.
Then he eventually kind of realizes that he's getting a hang of whatever it is, I guess. I think my guess is it's sort of like lucid dreaming where it takes him a while to sort of in the void realize like, oh, I'm dying. How do I get back? Oh, I have to whatever, do something to get back. So
I was also thinking of looking at it like maybe it is like a game of catch, but with his like soul or consciousness, like into like his consciousness goes into the void and then it's got like he's got to catch his conscious, like he's playing catch with himself basically.
Okay, interesting
type of thing. I was just trying to see if there I could draw any connection between what Reggie chose as the training. I mean, obviously it's a bonding thing as well, but as the training activity.
Yeah, because he said that you had to like work on your reflexes basically.
Right.
So it's somehow your soul-based reflexes. I'm not 100% sure on that.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't tried it, so I don't necessarily know how it
works.
I
would recommend not trying it. We do not condone. Oh, shoot. They gave it a name in a future episode. Like Carball.
Oh,
kill
yeah.
Ball,
yeah.
Something like that. I can't remember what it's called. Anyway, so Klaus eventually presumably gets it down to only a few seconds because there's a point where Reggie says 2 minutes, and then they show it like three more times, but they never announce the amount of time. So I'm guessing it's probably under a minute.
Yeah. I mean, way to go. It works. It works. He can do it.
Yeah.
And then, like this next part though, I was like, okay, how many powers does Klaus have? You know, like, I got the whole, like, I can reanimate myself thing. But then Reggie takes him to that graveyard and, like, he's being chased by ghosts. So he can still see, so he can see ghosts, he can move ghosts, he can be a ghost. He can also, like, I'm trying to come up with a list of Klaus powers. Can you help me out here?
I feel like he has full control over the sort of dead, like, spectral realm, like the, I think sort of season one, he can conjure ghosts. And okay. He's also sort of tormented by them because he doesn't have great control over that ability. And that's what we see here. And so I think the scene here in the graveyard is him learning to, like, then also expel the ghosts, like, not like rid himself of the ghosts, push them away from himself, because I think they're sort of attracted to his presence or something, and that's how they show up. Season two was all about how he can, if he has a communication with, like, a deceased person, he can also sort of make them somewhat corporeal and interacting with objects and people, etc., and also himself. And we also even saw the ghosts in the barn battle in season two, like, catch him as he's falling. So it's clearly the spectral ghost can also sort of interact with him. And potentially other people at the very beginning of season two in the, like, battle with the nuclear war that didn't end up ever happening. He's sort of controlling those ghosts to fight. So clearly he can sort of make them interact in that way. And then this season, it's all about how he also has power over his own death and can come back. So it all checks out to me. It definitely, this is another point where the internet started being like, okay, Klaus is just really overpowered. But I think considering the fact that he spent the first two seasons being, like, the least powerful and almost never getting to use his powers, I'm okay with this.
I appreciate the evolution and growth in Klaus's skills as he's, like, letting go of other things. I just am like, you put all of this into one character, but you have two super strength people. Like, this is where it gets a little bit hard for me, is like, you can come up with all of this stuff. Look at all this stuff you made. Look at all the stuff you just came up with. This is so much stuff. Any one of those powers on their own could stand very strong. And so, not saying that I'm saying take them away from Klaus and give them to someone else, but, like, okay, do the same thing with super strength. Think about super strength and divide it up into 80 different pieces of pie. I don't know. I don't know how to do that, but maybe there's a way to do that. And that's the only distracting part when it comes to talking about Klaus's powers for me, is, like, I don't think he's overpowered. I think it's very true to his character, but I think it's just unbalanced when you look at the exploration of the other powers.
I agree, and I would say that's how I felt about Vanya / Victor for the first three seasons, or all the way through so far, is I think that they have a power, and I keep comparing it to, like, Wanda, where it's mm-hmm. like, what is the extent of your power? It seems like you can kind of do whatever. Like, season one, where it was just sort of manipulating sound waves, I kind of got that. Like, okay, that's cool, but that's powerful. But how does that also, like, manipulate the weather, which we've also seen?
Yeah.
How does that?
Blow up the moon.
It just seems like you can, like, use sound waves to do whatever you want, is kind of the impression that I get from that. So I don't love that, because that just seems so much more powerful than a lot of the other ones. Whereas I feel like it would be maybe cool in the future to see an exploration of how Luther and Diego maybe could have more power. I mean, Five's already got a pretty awesome power, so that's cool.
Well, and it also evolved, right? Like, it started with blipping, and then it went to time jumping, and then it was blipping within time jumping. You know what I mean? Like, it had different stages. There was an evolution there. And Allison got one artificially, which we'll talk about in a little bit, but she got a little bit of a change. So it's possible.
I think the idea is that none of them throughout, like, so far have learned the full extent of their powers or learned the full extent of how to control their powers. And so hopefully we'll get more of that. I do feel like it's interesting when talking about all these that, like, Five has not used the new power that he learned at the end of season two, which was the, like, really quick short time travel, like just going back a few seconds. Surprising that that didn't really come into play this season.
Especially in the end game. At the last episode. Yeah.
Yes, particularly in the end game. Because you would think, and maybe it was kind of a thing where the writers realized, like, this is a little bit also overpowered, but I guess he wasn't there when I was thinking the main time you would use this would be like where Reggie kills Luther, but I feel like that maybe he didn't see that. Maybe he was already in the tunnel, because otherwise I think he would have used it there.
I was also just thinking that I think he might have used it in the end game. I can't remember. We'll find out when I watch that episode again. But I think there was like a rewindy time, but I don't remember how that
happened. Maybe when they're battling the protectors. No, what are they called?
Guardians.
The guardians. Yeah. So we'll talk about it. But oh well. At this point, Klaus has new powers. It's interesting.
Yeah, it was fun. Looking back at the series as a whole, I think that series of scenes stands out for sure.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
Yes. Okay, so I lumped the rest of the episode into one sort of main plot, even though there's kind of several different things that are going on here. But we've got the two families, the Sparrows and the Umbrella Academy, joining together to take on the Kugelblitz. And so within that, we have a lot of fallout from the end of the last episode with the Allison and Victor and Harlan situation, where Allison murdered Harlan and gave him to the Sparrows, and also sort of Luther's connection to Sloan. And I was happy, well, I don't know if happy is the right word, but I was at least glad that they attempted to address a little bit more of the Luther and Allison stuff here. Luther is going to ask Allison if she told Victor what she did to Harlan, and they're going to argue in that about Allison basically saying, oh, well, Harlan deserved it.
Yeah.
Victor was lying to us, etc. And Luther's like, yeah, do you not feel bad at all? Do we need to get you someone to talk to, a therapist or someone? Because clearly things are not right. And she's like, no, I'm fine. And he's like, okay, the thing you did to me back at the hotel was not all right. So it definitely seems like the situation on the show, at least, is that Luther is viewing this more as a Allison having some struggles and needing some help, rather than exactly taking out his anger at the situation. But I think he's clearly trying to convey to her, this was wrong and this was messed up and not something that the normal you would do.
Yeah, I was encouraged to hear some anger behind his question when he asked it. He was like what you did to me, that type of inflection in his voice when he said that. And then, but he was cut short, so we never really got to explore past the initial question. And I didn't see any remorse on Allison's face that kind of showed that she was like, oh, I hurt my brother, or I am concerned for myself. Yes, that's very out of character. Sometimes I do something and my friend's like, that's not you. And I'm like, oh, you're right, that's not me. I'm in a bad place. There's something like that. But I didn't see any of those interactions happen. So yes, I do think that's how Luther's seeing it, but we're still not exploring it fully.
Yeah, we're clearly still lacking any sort of recognition on Allison's part that she did was wrong, even if at least Luther is speaking up about it. But so they're all hanging out at the Sparrow's house, and I guess at some point they contact Five and Diego and Lila, who also show up, and they have a meeting. Luther's trying to unite the families. He's being his sort of cute, dorky self. He's asking Sloan, am I sweating? How are things? And they've clearly organized some food, and it's just candy and chips and stuff like that. No one's really partaking in that, except for noticeably Lila. So I think this might have been another a little hint that Lila might be eating either from stress or anxiety or pregnancy related. So then Victor shows up, and that's when Allison tells everyone that she killed Harlan, and also that Harlan was responsible for the death of their mothers, and by extension, Claire and the end of the world. So
Yeah, welcome to the meeting, Victor.
Hey, Victor, how's it going?
All of the things. This was hard. This is hard to watch still, even though I knew it was coming, even though we could see it in her character up to this point. I still don't 100% did Victor lie? Did he lie by omission? Obviously he didn't tell his family that, which is 100% okay, but we are not 100% okay, but okay, I get where you're coming from. But also, this is a family that doesn't communicate. So, I don't know.
I do side with Allison at this part. Allison lays out, for the last two seasons, here are all the things that Victor's done wrong. Ending the world, killing Pogo, sure. Blowing up our house, yeah. Almost killing me. Things that honestly, it's been pretty shocking that she's been able to forgive Victor for. And so I think she's kind of showing, maybe I haven't necessarily forgiven and forgotten all of those things. And I'm frustrated that we're all treating Victor like he can do no wrong when he's partially responsible for my child no longer existing. She calls out again that everyone keeps telling her that she needs to kind of suck up her pain, mm-hmm. and no one's trying to help her fix it when we spent the last two seasons trying to fix all the damage that Victor did. So I agree with that. I still don't think that her actions that are, other things she's done are great. And obviously it's not a fun character to watch, but she does have a lot of points here. She's making a lot of points. And I think to some extent, Victor gets that. But I also think that it's right that killing Harlan was just done to hurt Victor and had no other purpose. And
especially after the power transfer, what is?
Yeah. And this is not killing someone who might be a threat or is destructive in the here and now or the future. It's this was just revenge and this was murder.
Yeah.
That Allison did here. So
yeah,
we can all laugh when Five murders the boardroom of people because we don't know them and it was kind of funny and we can just sort of assume that they're bad.
But although we do not condone murder.
Don't murder on this podcast.
Yeah.
But this was a little different and it was much darker and it's not great. It's not great. But I also think that if we have all gathered around on this show and collectively decided that for whatever reason, because they were in a power trance or something, that we're okay with the fact that Victor did kill Pogo in season one and the whole world, then I think we can understand why Allison is at the very least not necessarily worse than anything they've done.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tough situation because I also, when I look back at Victor's story, I also see someone who wasn't 100% in control. And I guess that's also what Allison's saying here too, is that her pain is out of her control.
Yes.
And so she cannot control her pain. And this was the extent of her, this was the result of her actions because, or her actions were a result of that pain that she couldn't control. And that's how it's similar to Victor. I thought it the reactions of everyone was also interesting because Ben was loving the drama. Ben thinks we just, we fight the same. Our families fight the same. They don't necessarily. Diego says, we don't fight. We don't fight like this. This is a different level of fighting. Luther tries to stop it every once in a while. Any other noticeable reactions to this from your side?
It was mostly centered around Ben, and it was shown for a little bit of humor there. I think Ben just liked being not the jerkiest person around for a little while, potentially. But I think it was also there to highlight Diego saying, no, this is out of character. This is not right. This is not good. And especially since Diego was the one who, for the last couple episodes, was Allison's fine. Don't worry about it. It'll be fine. And now he's realizing maybe not
so fine. Not so fine.
Maybe not great of me to teach her to just sort of access her anger like that. Yeah. But anyway, so Victor is going to go to Ben's room where he sees a bunch of drawings of Jennifer. labeled drawings of Jennifer. I read a bunch more Jennifer theories online. Do you have any additional theories?
No.
Mostly kind of what we've said, that Jennifer was somebody that clearly Ben had an attachment to probably before some sort of mission. And then she probably died in a mission, most likely due to something he did. Seems like in this timeline, she, that action, caused him to get demoted from number one to number two. And in the previous timeline, it probably resulted in something, something so horrible for Ben that it's implied in season one that he might have taken his life. It's a little bit confusing because they say like the darkness within him consumed him, but then it's also implied in season two and the whole time that he's sort of coming back and hanging out with Klaus that maybe he like did not take his life, because he seems to be like, I don't know. That's never referenced throughout season two. So it's a little bit hard to know for sure, but clearly Jennifer, somebody that he had an attachment to.
I hope, for the love of all things holy, we get some Jennifer stuff in season four, if there is a season four, because otherwise I have no idea why we're talking about this.
And we can talk more about this with our guests next week, because I know they have some questions about it. I did do some more research on the Christopher situation.
Oh, yes.
I think I have some more answers on that one. So,
oh, well, that's good.
Or at least some theories. So while Victor is hanging out in Ben's room, everybody else goes down to the Kugel in the basement. And the plan is to use Sloan, Lila, Christopher, and Victor to trap it. Now, I also read a lot about this. Did you follow exactly how these powers are doing, they're doing?
Okay. So Sloan can do gravity manipulation. So she is like creating like a gravity barrier, I think, to contain the Kugel. Lila is going to mimic Victor. And basically, from what I could tell in some sort of conversation that Victor has with Faye, is like, to feel the vibration of the black hole inside, because at one point Victor says, like, don't hurt the bees or don't shake the bees, something like that. So I wonder if he was thinking of bees like Harlan was thinking about bees.
Well, that was when Sloan was saying, have you ever tried to corral a hive of bees? And then Diego or Luther is like, no, why would anyone do that? I think it must be Diego. And then that's when they're talking about, like, make sure that you don't, like, disrupt
the
black holes, yes, that are collapsing on themselves. And he's like, don't shake the bees. Got it.
Okay. So again, using the power of sound, Victor is going to...
How? I just still don't... Whatever. Still don't, like, get the whole power
equal
sound thing.
Equal or more sound? I have no idea. But then Lila was going to mimic that. And then Christopher is going to be the container for the Kugel, because apparently Christopher can be a container for things, not just zap people.
Yeah, so like, that's the part I don't get. So they're just gonna like have this series of tiny black holes collapsing on themselves live inside Christopher, and they thought that would just work.
Apparently, yeah. I don't know how they didn't think it was going to put him in any harm. I don't know how they didn't think like radiation would be at play. I have no idea. I mean, and these,
or just like swallow him up from the inside.
Yes,
I don't know.
Like, there are some smart people in this group, apparently, that totally missed all of this.
Yeah, I don't know. So that's apparently what happened. But in order to do this, we have another quick scene where Ben goes up to his room, finds Victor, and then kind of, like, negs him about, like, oh, did you think someone was going to chase after you and try to convince you to come back down? Like, no, wow, so embarrassing for you. But then he also like kind of does convince Victor to come down, because he's like, bro, as all I can tell, like, you're just being really selfish, like feeling like your petty grudge against Allison is like worth watching the world burn. So,
yeah, because previously, Victor had flashbacks to conversations that he had with Allison about like how much they love each other and all of this. So I think it played well into this conversation that Ben had with him at this moment, where it's like, hey, you know, there are bigger problems than this. Why don't you try to work it out?
Yeah, yeah. Lila is also going to have a conversation with Allison during this time where Allison's talking about how killing Harlan didn't make her feel anything. And it seems like she was just trying to feel something, sad, happy, anything. And she laughs about the fact that nothing really matters because they keep changing timelines and people just like don't even really exist. And Lila is explaining that things are still definitely real. But there's just so much happening and moving around you so fast that you're getting dizzy with the changes. And Lila says you have to pick a focus point, much like a figure skater, and concentrate on it. And Allison says that focus point was Claire, doesn't exist anymore. And so Lila's like, eh, pick another one. And so I think, you know, we've talked about it, but I think a lot of Allison's issues here also with the like Victor lying about their moms is more about Allison's clear desperation to have Victor maybe even be that focus point. Like she was like, okay, Ray doesn't exist. Claire doesn't exist, but I can at least lock on to Victor. Like we've had this relationship growing. We've got this sibling thing going. And then finding out that Victor, and throughout the last couple episodes became more and more apparent, was pushing Allison away or not confiding in them. Even things like when Allison was trying to make sure that Harlan didn't hurt Victor when they were trying to transfer the powers. And Victor's like, you know, you don't have to be here. Like, you can leave. And I think that really hurt Allison as well. I think Allison was so upset that Victor was putting their life on the line when I think Allison viewed them as like, no, you're my focal point. Like, I need you to still be here. And then to find out that Victor both sort of put more energy into the Harlan situation than with Allison and also hid something from Allison. I think all of that sort of, it's like, imagine if you have someone that you feel like is your last sort of thread and then find out that they have in your mind either betrayed you or not trusted you or not felt that same closeness. And so I'm sure that that's a huge portion of the situation.
Yeah, there's I can see that. I can see that. It reminds me of a line from Severance where it's like, no, you're my best friend, but I'm your very good friend. You know, like they're like having that unequal type of situation, because you do see it when Harlan shows up. Victor completely changes when it comes to his interactions with Allison. And I don't think it's in a way that is like malicious on his part in any way. He's trying to like fix a wrong. He's trying to like protect Harlan, protect himself, protect the family. Like he's acting in that instance, but not necessarily realizing what it's doing to Allison at that time. And I also wonder if like Allison wants to be the focal point for someone as well. And like the fact that maybe she thought that Victor was that, like while you were explaining, like, that maybe
on her as well.
Yeah. And when Harlan shows up, the focus definitely goes off of Allison and goes to Harlan for Victor. So I could see that playing into
I think that's
well.
definitely also part of it. It just really seems like Allison is feeling lost and feeling not appreciated. And I do think that some of that blame does lie on Victor, but at the same time, Harlan is the representation of the people that Victor lost. And I think that if Ray was in this timeline and Harlan wasn't, I don't know that Allison would be as receptive to Victor's pain. Like, you know, it's hard to know whether or not they would have that relationship go in the opposite direction. So
yeah, because a lot of the interactions between Allison and Victor prior to this, just about like getting back to Ray, getting back to Sissy, like they had that as their focal point too. Mm-hmm. Like, and then when Harlan shows up, the shared focal point is also split.
Yes. So they get back together. The group tries to trap the Kugelblitz. I don't know if any of this really makes sense in any kind of logic way, but we talked it through. So that's happening. Then Grace shows up and tries to torch the group. Mm-hmm. Five ends up teleporting Grace out of there and twists her neck to kill her, which later brings up a funny line when Victor says, like, hey, it was really nice of you to kill Mom so that David wouldn't have to. And then Victor's like, yeah, that sounded weirder after I said it. So also at this time, Grace is quoting Isaiah 63:4. I don't know if you looked this up.
I did not look this up, but before we talk about that, like, she also has dressed herself as a nun. Like, she's all in. She's all in on this. I don't know. And also, like, where did she learn about all this stuff? But anyway, no, I did not look up Isaiah 63:4. What do we got?
So depending on the translation, it's loosely translated to, "For the day of vengeance is in my heart and the year of my redeemed is come." That's not exactly what Grace says, but it's very close. It's something about my day of vengeance and my the year of my, or that my day of something, the year my vengeance has come, something like that. It's kind of a creepy moment with the, like, the nun outfit and the the blowtorch.
It's one of those moments where I definitely was like, yes, this is a comic book, or like, this is a graphic novel. Like, this is something that you would not necessarily dream up in any other world. Like, I was like, yep, that, okay, that makes sense for the show. Doesn't make sense, but makes sense for the show.
For the show. So that was wild. And then they condense the Kugel down into Christopher, and then they party to Another One Bites the Dust. Yay! You saved the world, even though it's burning outside. Like, what are you celebrating?
Well, you know, they did it, okay? Like, they did it.
Sure. So on the roof, Luther gives Sloan a list of her favorite Italian monuments that are left standing, along with a ring of moon rock, and asks Sloan to marry him. Now, by my count, they've known each other for like 5 days. How does he know her list of favorite Italian monuments that are still standing when it's like, that was a topic of conversation you had over the last couple days?
I think so. I think there was like some mention or some conversation about how she had like a list of places she wanted to go, and she was sad she was never like gonna go see them or something like that. And then Luther was like, okay, well, here are the ones we can go see. Like, don't get sad about the ones you can't see, but these are the ones we can see.
Still, whatever. What'd you think of the proposal?
Well, you know, who doesn't love a good apocalyptic proposal?
Your classic apocalyptic proposal.
Yes. Oh, I mean, it's very true to what, like, Luther, I knew this was part of what Luther wanted to do. Like, it's not surprising from the Luther standpoint, because he's, at least this season, been very clear on his intentions with Sloan. But also, like, using the moment, I thought it was very soon for the, hey, we saved the world, let's get married. Like, that I thought was very, very soon. But I did enjoy how we found out that maybe they didn't save the world in the middle of the proposal. I thought that was also very interesting. Yes.
Yeah. So after the party with the Sparrows, minus Sloan, there's we have Faye, Christopher, and Ben hanging out, and Faye and Christopher are like, we're gonna kill the umbrellas in the morning. Truce is over. But Ben's like, can't do that, I've made a deal with Reggie and we've got a bigger plan. But he doesn't tell them what it is. So thoughts here, what is Ben in on with Reggie?
It's got to be Oblivion, right?
But why would Ben be in on this?
Because Reggie probably said hey, like, when you go through the thing and we go to this new world, you're going to be number one. Like, it probably has
to. You probably didn't need to do any more than that, because Ben would just be like, okay, sure, sounds good.
Yeah. Oh, and you'll be around, and I'll have your approval, and I'll be in charge of people. You know what I mean? Like, something like that.
Interesting that he doesn't just tell Faye and Christopher, but.
I don't know.
And Faye's like, you know what? I'm done. You're a terrible leader, and you only think of yourself. So Christopher agrees, and she clinks her champagne glass against Christopher. And somehow that vibration makes the Kugel burst out of him, which kills both himself and Faye. I did like the fact that Ben was like telling Faye, like, get down, run out of here. Like, clearly he cared enough about her to not like want her to die, but she didn't. She was trying to help Christopher. Unfortunately, I don't know why the clinking of the glass caused a vibration and not like the music they were dancing around to earlier.
It's frequency. It's probably frequency. Like, the frequency of the pitch of.
Well, it probably would have happened eventually, right? Like, well, I don't.
Yeah.
I don't think Christopher like was going to somehow be able to like kill the Kugelblitz. I think they were just like storing it inside of him.
Yeah, like if they could get him to space and make it like go somewhere far away, but they had no way of doing that. So I really didn't know what their game plan was here.
Yeah. So the house starts crumbling down and the Kugel is like now massive and everyone starts to leave. And that is the end of the episode proper.
Yeah. Yeah.
A couple more things.
Yeah. The world is still ending by the end of the episode.
Oh, yeah. No, they solved nothing. If anything, we murdered more people and now it's worse. Yes. But maybe Sloane and Luther are engaged. So, yay.
I thought the moon wreck was sweet. But anyway, continue.
It was sweet because she had shown an interest in the moon. Mm-hmm. So that, yeah, it was fine. So there's a little bit of a Lila and Diego plot line in this as well. I do like at the beginning of the episode that they're wearing black. Yeah. Because I guess in honor of Stan. And so Lila's going to tell Diego that she's pregnant in this episode. Thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was really well done by both actors in the scene. Like they really brought their stuff to this. I think it was hard for me to believe the first time that I watched it. Cause I was like, what do you mean? What do you mean you're pregnant? You ate sushi again. You ate sushi. How could you be pregnant? I don't understand. But then as the scene went on, it became more and more believable. I thought Diego's reaction was one of compassion and also like love for himself as much as love for Lila, as much as love for their future life. Like there was just a lot going on in there. And I think that it's totally fine for him to ask for time and think about it. But you could definitely tell that these two people care about each other and love each other, even though they're having this discussion of like, hey, by the way, I did kidnap that kid and he's not yours. And also I'm pregnant. And also that kid that I took is possibly dead. And also, yes, do you want to be this, you know, father of my child? I did like the part where Lila said, you know, it's very hard for me. Like, I understand that a person who didn't have a father, you know, asking to have a father for this kid is weird, but that's what I want. I thought it was a very honest conversation.
Yeah, I thought it was honest. And I understand Diego's like, I think he was saying, can I have some time to think about like being a family with you?
Right, right.
But I think Diego, based on everything shown with Stan, was probably on board for the like having some role in his child's life is what it seemed like.
Yes, yes.
So she's worried that she won't be good at the mother thing based on her relationship with her mother. And it makes sense. I did think overall it was a sweet scene and I'm very interested in watching the next couple episodes from the perspective of watching it again, because mm-hmm. I think the first time through, I was so just sort of overwhelmed with everything that's happened in the last couple episodes that I wasn't, taking it in as much. So I'm really curious to sort of analyze them over the next two.
Yeah. Yeah. It will be interesting to see it with this perspective for sure.
So we also have a conversation between Five and Victor, and the conversation's about both Victor and Allison. And I like this scene mostly because it really shows like Five being the adult that he is compared to everyone else, like just definitely treating them like children. So we have, he is talking to Victor and says like, you know, we're all worried about the effect that killing someone will have on Allison, but I'm also worried about you because you've murdered a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And like, trust me, the math isn't going to work out. There's no equation. There's no formula that will, you know, save five Harlans for every two Claires to make like you good again, basically. Yeah. He's like, we just have a lot of power and, you know, we need to use that wisely. But he warns Victor that because you're very, very powerful, the decisions you make have impact on the entire world. So you don't get to make them alone, which is also basically the entire plot of Captain America Civil War. So
yeah.
I guess Five.
Yeah. The Umbrella Accords. We're talking about the Umbrella Accords. Yes.
The Umbrella Accords. Exactly. And then, of course, he says, you know what they call a superhero who works alone and doesn't listen to anybody, a villain. Mm-hmm. And so there's no more going rogue or lying to them again.
I thought it was a very, like, I loved it. It was a very, like you had mentioned, very mature conversation to come from, from Vibe. I think it's one that Victor needed to hear. And I think it was one that shows, like, hey, Victor, we're concerned about you, but we're concerned about you from a loving perspective, not from like an anger perspective. Just like, we're in this together. I've got your back, but you have to tell me things for that to happen. I can't support you if I don't know what's going on, type of thing, which is a very like family conversation to have.
Well, and I think somebody needed to tell Victor, like, yeah, it's harsh what Allison said, but she had a point with the, like, you're very powerful and that doesn't give you the license to unilaterally make decisions.
Yeah.
That affect more than just yourself. Which could be said for any one of them. Yep. So maybe something that Ben should learn.
Company policy, maybe something like that.
Yes. So there's also a really small moment at the beginning of the episode where Five wants to go into the portal to the other side of the hotel. And Diego and Lila convince him not to so far, but it definitely has his mind churning a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, he's got this this tattoo. He's got the story from Pogo. He is concerned about closing loops. I think he just wants to go and see what it's got in store.
Yeah. So at the beginning of the episode, when Lila's in Germany, that's when we see when she's hanging out at the like communal band apartment or whatever, that there's a bong that has smoke curling into an umbrella in a sparrow shape. So caught the emblems this episode. Really nice. Appreciative of the fact that they're doing it in every episode. I feel like in the first two seasons, it wasn't every episode. So now I'm wondering if maybe I just missed some of them. I'll need to go back and check that. I already mentioned my favorite song moment. Did you have another one?
No, I enjoyed the Cats in the Cradle.
Yeah, that was good. That was a good one too. Yeah. Do you have any other particular reflections from season or episode 7 in relation to the whole season?
No, I mean, I really enjoyed retalking this one out because the whole like Alice and Victor thing, I think, can be seen in a little bit of a different light. I'm still not hot on the whole thing. Still not liking it. But there's definitely a little bit more nuance to it on a rewatch for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's something where we always like to analyze interesting things and cool things, but I think it's also important to analyze the evil things that people do and the reasons behind them in the show.
Most of my other podcasting has been about crime. So I'm all about get digging in and finding out why people are doing those things.
Makes sense. Well, we have some really exciting guests coming up. I hope everyone enjoyed our conversation with Brian Scally last week, and we're going to have some more coming up here, so get ready for those.
Watch the Twitters. I do also want to let everyone know that Posher Recaps did just launch a merch store by the time you're listening to this. So if you go to posherrecaps.com/store, you can outfit yourself with one of many t-shirts or mugs, and that is a space that will be growing, so I encourage you to go check that out. If you'd like to support Posher Recaps, you can do so by buying merch from there or by becoming a patron by going to if you want to become a patron, go to patreon.com/posherrecaps. You can get into the Discord and talk to us there as well. Super fun community. Love it. And now I can love it and let people know that I love it so much because I can get a t-shirt and talk about it. So congratulations to everyone over there for putting that together.
I'm looking at it now. Some great t-shirts, some great mug designs. Definitely check it out.
Yeah, good stuff.
Good All right, stuff. Everyone. Thanks for joining us again this week. And make sure that you check out everything else that we're both doing. Marissa, are you doing anything else at the moment you want to plug?
No, you just follow me on Twitter at MarsBars, MarzBrs.
Yes, and definitely reach out to both of us, Marissa there and myself at Frail Mary, for any feedback you have on the series, the show as a whole, even stuff from season 1 and 2. We'll be happy to talk about that in our feedback episode.
Yeah.
You can also check out everything that I have going on at Kowski Cast. Season 6 of Riverdale is finally starting to come to a close, so definitely join us for that riveting content, myself and Kirsten McInnes. All right, until next time.